bars, hood chick with some rave tricks. You can eat her or could spit me, call my man chick. Know she need a dawn, so I'ma leave alone. Ice cream in the cone, leave her in the LLB with baggy jeans is on. And you know me, I be in leaves with some sneakers on. Preferably clouds when the rest of them.
Good morning, Mission. My name is Julian, and you are listening to Listen Local. I'm here with my colleague, Laura.
Hi, Julian. How's it going?
How you doing, Laura?
I'm doing pretty good, actually. It's a nice morning. Things are good, you know. Life goes on in the Mission.
Life goes on in the Mission, and life goes on for you, apparently. Do you have any news to share with our audience?
Yeah, I mean, if there's listeners of Listen Local who have gotten used to hearing me introduce this show every other Thursday morning, I am actually heading away from Mission Local. Come January, I will be on different airwaves. I actually won't personally be on the airwaves, but I'll be working on production at a local radio station, so you won't hear me here anymore.
Congratulations.
Thanks, and congratulations on being the new Listen Local host, Julian.
So why did you want to move to KLW?
Well, aren't we going to talk about local news before we talk about my news?
Well, I don't know. I just thought, in any case, yeah, let's talk about some local news. What's on the docket?
Well, I think we should talk about all of the work that you've been doing around covering the police department. San Francisco Police Department has been, you know, working through some issues, one might say. Is that fair?
I think that's pretty fair to say.
And, you know, they got these more than 200 recommendations from the Department of Justice a couple years ago about use of force and generally, you know, community policing and or the lack thereof. And I think that, you know, Mission Local has been focusing on keeping tabs on how that is being actually put in place, put into action. And I don't know, what's your sense? Has it been, I mean, are we seeing a sea change?
I think that's kind of hard to say right now.
Right.
You know, just how they're tracking the reforms is actually, you know, it is a little bit pie in the sky right now, only because the Department of Justice, who initially made those recommendations, is no longer acting as an oversight body, for the SFPD to, you know, to make these recommendations. So it actually is up to the SFPD to make the recommendations itself and to oversee itself, which, you know, kind of in some ways poses some problems.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, before we get too into the weeds on what exactly is happening, we should maybe discuss a little bit why Mission Local is looking at this so closely and why we're scrutinizing this. I mean, keep in mind that the Mission was the place where the Frisco Five did their hunger strike. They were out in front of Mission Station, and the Mission has seen tons of protests about police use of force. And does the Mission District have the highest number in recent years of fatal shootings by police?
I'm not entirely sure. Why don't you tell me?
I think we've got, in the last few years, we've seen 4 people shot and killed by police officers in the Mission District. And, I mean, keep in mind the Mission District is a huge district, even compared to some other districts. In terms of population, in terms of how often people call the police,
and
in terms of geography.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
So that may have something to do with it. But, you know, no matter what the actual cause is, I'm not going to argue for what the causes of this effect. Ultimately, people here care, and they act on their feelings about police reform. And the police commission just recently voted to give San Francisco police officers tasers, which a lot of people who aren't deeply involved in this don't realize, that San Francisco police officers cannot carry tasers. And it has been voted against for, I think, 15 years, you know, like this came up periodically every couple of years and it was voted down. And now for the first time, it's approved. So that is going to be a big change.
It is going to be a big change. And, you know, I see both sides of the argument here. I mean, last week, a man was who stole a California lottery van was shot and killed by police.
In the Mission?
not in the mission. The chase started very close to the mission. It started on it started on 23rd in Arkansas, so that's more like Potrero Hill. But it started pretty close. That's kind of next to the hospital. They chased him into the Bayview, where an officer shot at him and killed him. And, you know, we're just kind of, you know, at this point, you know, it, while my personal feelings, you know, while I probably more leaned towards officers, you know, not having tasers and, you know, getting more comfortable with their so-called de-escalation tactics that the SPD has been slowly implementing since the Department of Justice came in, and maybe perhaps even before that, I kind of wonder if the officers having tasers, or if the officer who shot and killed this young man, if he had a taser, maybe the outcome could have been different. What do you think?
I wasn't there. I mean, so you're going to this meeting tonight, right, where the police present to the public their side of the story, the town hall meeting?
Yeah, exactly. And that's going on at True Hope Church tonight at 6 p.m.
Well, my guess is that we'll hear a little bit more about the narrative there. And there's always an argument that the narrative presented by police and the narrative presented by others is going to sharply differ. We saw this immediately after the shooting of every person who has been shot by police officers, people, even when there's video, the interpretations of what are happening in the video differ sharply from person to person. But, you know, with Amilcar Perez Lopez, there were people who were at a vigil for him.
Who is that?
It's a young Guatemalan man who was shot and killed by police, I believe, in 2015 on Folsom Street near 24th. And people, at first the narrative was he was drunk and had a knife. Later the narrative became he was actually the victim of a crime. He was being threatened by somebody and chased that person down the street in defense and to get back something that had been stolen. The narrative changed every time that new information came out. And it changed really dramatically. And, you know, from an outside perspective, it's very difficult to parse that, I think. And to guess what would have happened. It's almost like every explanation that we have in this case is hypothetical because the people who are directly involved, one of them cannot give their narrative. And the other two, you know, can, but only indirectly because they're a little bit shut away within the police department. At least that's my sense, that there isn't very direct access to people who are involved in officer-involved shootings. I mean, is that fair to say?
Sorry, come again?
That people who are involved in officer-involved shootings, the officers who are involved, they're not directly accessible.
Oh, right, exactly. And their names are almost, you know, never released right off the bat. And, you know, it takes
some time.
It takes some time, definitely.
So, you know, from the outside, almost everything is couched in this. If this is how it happened, then we can say something would have changed. You know, certain changes in the parameters would have changed the outcome. And there's a lot of arguments around tasers, around whether they are in fact less lethal. I mean, obviously they're less lethal than being shot by a gun. But this term less lethal already comes with the implication that the point was for a non-lethal weapon, but we haven't quite gotten there yet because it's very difficult to find a balance between something that will incapacitate a person who is really a threat to an officer or somebody else and something that doesn't have the potential to kill.
Indeed. I feel the same way. That will be the questions as the police, you know, slowly roll out tasers and whether or not they're going to be able to use them the right way in, you know, their, you know, so-called non-lethal capacity. Time will tell with that. But with the task at hand, you know, we have to sort of wonder, you know, whether or not that could have, you know, that could have helped the situation, or if this officer, which media is reporting, you know, has was only 3 days graduated from the police academy, whether any circumstances could have helped this guy, deal with the situation better. And
the problem is, as outlined in a couple different editorials, Joe Eskenazi, who's a fantastic writer, did an editorial or a column for Mission Local a while back about tasers and the difficulty with them. And I think the main difficulty is training. And the SFPD already has a lot of training to do. I mean, they're doing a lot of crisis intervention training. They're doing a lot of training around de-escalation. And here you have another tool that needs to be applied differently than the other tools that are already available. I think it's interesting to look at also the case of Luis Gongora, who was a homeless man shot and killed in 2016, I believe, by police officers on Shotwell Street near 19th.
Mm-hmm.
And he, again, the narratives differ sharply. I mean, we had multiple witnesses who were interviewed by the media because this occurred in a homeless encampment, and witnesses are directly available. It's not so hard to get them to talk to you. Again, different narratives. Did he have a knife or did he not? Was he a threat or was he not? And to me, the question is also, you know, non-lethal weapons were used. The officers used a beanbag gun in this situation before they used a firearm and argued that it did not subdue him. The narrative differs, whether that subdued him or not, whether he needed subduing, but the thing is, if your officers still feel threatened and they have another item at their disposal and it doesn't work, was it worthwhile? I don't know.
That'll certainly be a question, you know, and whether or not, you know, they're, if the weapon doesn't work initially with one officer, you know, whether or not there will be more officers, you know, using, you know, employing that weapon, or employing the device or the weapon, and, you know, that too can make it more lethal. I think, you know, if one officer, you know, points a stun gun and successfully shoots somebody with a stun gun, you know, then maybe it, you know, will have its intended effects. But, if, you know, something doesn't work for some reason and they have to get close to the guy, they have to get much closer. You know, there's several officers that, are, you know, now, you know, sticking this guy with these electric needles.
That's a really unpleasant way to think about it, but getting tased is unpleasant.
Deeply
unpleasant.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Now, you know, I mean, a lot of officers do, you know, say that they will, you know, tase themselves, you know, just to know.
I saw a reporter do that once.
And what did he say?
Not much.
Yeah, I would imagine he was pretty stunned.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's the question now. And, you know, I've actually been, you know, digging through, the voters, I think a couple years ago, voted to, essentially make the police department, release their use of force data. And, so, you know, sort of a big part of my, you know, job now is sort of going through some of this data and, you know, kind of looking at looking at use of force trends, you know, citywide, and that, you know, it really tells a very interesting story when you go district by district, and you know, and how this training, this, you know, so-called de-escalation training, is actually, you know, how it's taking effect. And it does seem to be taking, you know, an effect citywide. I mean there have been, you know, there's Tenderloin Station has seen a dramatic decrease in use of force. Why?
What is the use of force really, practically speaking? I mean, it sounds like when mm-hmm. somebody hits somebody or shoots somebody. Is that how they define use of force?
Yeah, I mean, those are part of it. But use of force is a spectrum with probably the lightest being, well, I don't want to say that, but officers pointing a gun is considered a form of force,
even if they don't fire it.
If they if I'm pointing the barrel of my pistol, you know, toward any, you know, part of you, mm-hmm. Or in your direction, it is...
You used force.
I use force.
And so across all categories of force, it's been decreasing in the Tenderloin, or is this just, is there a dramatic thing that, is there one thing that sticks out that people have been using less?
Actually, I haven't gotten a chance to, you know, to examine Tenderloin so closely, but...
What about the mission?
The mission officers are pointing their guns a lot, and that is by far the most common type of force used in the mission, which, you know, I think, you know, you can say that even though, you know, it's not causing anybody physical harm, it's still, you know, it still really is a, you know, an act of violence. You know, pointing your gun at somebody, you know, is extremely threatening. And so whether or not that's, you know, that's a good strategy, and whether or not that fits into de-escalation is still, you know, that's kind of a question.
Do we know why that is happening so often in the mission?
I'm not entirely sure. I think it's always been happening, and a revision of the police's use of force strategy, they're just now recording it.
Right.
So, I mean, there really aren't any numbers before 2016 that, you know, that say how many times officers are using are pointing their firearms at subjects.
Right.
But
I would be so curious to find out if and when tasers are implemented, which may be as soon as next year if the police union has its way, because they're putting a ballot initiative on the ballot move the implementation up. If the pointing of tasers starts to outstrip the pointing of firearms as a use of force, and I don't know if there's any way to measure this, but I wonder if it is an effective deterrent for officers to point their guns. I assume that it is because they're doing it so frequently, but would then pointing a taser be as effective? If there's even a way to measure the effectiveness of pointing a firearm, how do we compare it to the effectiveness of pointing anything else? I mean, is this being used so often because it works and the threat is then de-escalated? Is that the best use of force because it's actually mostly the threat of force and like you said, nobody is injured? Is there even a way to tell?
I don't know if there's a way to tell. I mean, that's something that we can ask the police chief, or we can ask Captain Caltagirone of Mission Station, whether or not they believe that that's a good way to, you know, de-escalate a situation. But actually, I took a form of de-escalation training at the police headquarters a couple months back.
What does that look like?
Well, it's really bizarre, actually, and I'm not entirely sure, like, how effective it is in really training officers in these kinds of situations. Basically, what it looks like is you are in a room, and there's a giant screen in front of you, maybe the size of a, not the size of a movie theater screen, but maybe a little mini movie theater screen, and they play these scenarios for you with somebody kind of controlling. Did you ever read those Choose Your Own Stories?
Yes, Choose Your Own Adventure.
Choose Your Own Adventure, right. It's kind of like Choose Your Own Adventure in a lot of ways. So you they put on this training belt. When you have a fake gun, you have a fake baton, you have fake pepper spray. That's all kind of hooked into this system. And so I was given one where there was a vagrant in Golden Gate Park.
So hold on. So you decide what happens next, or you make a choice and then somebody at the controls decides what happens next?
Oh, yeah. Bingo. That's exactly what happens. So it's not like you choose based on your own, you know.
You choose your action.
You choose your action.
They choose the result.
They choose the result. Exactly. So for me, for instance, encountering this homeless guy in Golden Gate Park, you know, he was in the video, he was belligerent and drunk and sleeping in the bushes. And I had gotten a call that there had been some burglaries nearby, whatever that meant. And that, you know, I needed to take care of this homeless guy. And basically the commander there, who was overseeing this training, said that I did a good job in talking to the guy. But still, I mean, despite how gentle and calm I was with this video simulation, the homeless man threw down his bottle and started swinging at me, forcing me to take out my pepper spray and spray him. Now,
is that a common use of force that you see in the data? Use of pepper spray?
No, it's actually not.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You made an unconventional choice.
Well, pepper spray isn't specified in the use of force. It's
really?
God, I forgot the exact term for it now, but it's I think it's an intermediate force option. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be classified as intermediate.
Okay. So it's not that it's not a use of force, it's just that it's lumped in with other.
Yeah, it's lumped in with uses. Yeah, it's lumped in with others. Anyway, so, you know, but you have to wonder, you know, if first of all, why I was picking on this guy in the first place. Why, you know, and why, you know, given how patient I was with him, they're having this guy start swinging at me, you know, in the simulation. And, you know, even though that, you know, the department, you know, says that it is emphasizing this de-escalation, you kind of have to wonder how much they're actually emphasizing it.
Totally apart from how individual police officers respond and what the policy is, I do wonder what the impact is of when we call the police. Many reform efforts, you see activists calling on citizens just to simply stop calling police and instead trying other methods. Sometimes there's groups that are conflict resolution groups or that come in and try to calm things down. Sometimes law enforcement is just not the right response. I mean, if you have somebody who's having a serious mental health issue and is not a threat to other people,
right,
who's not breaking any laws, people tend to call the police on trespassers, for example, when they see a homeless person sleeping in their doorway or something like that. And so, you know, I wonder, we put a lot of this on police, and they do carry guns, so part of me feels like that's justified. But also, how much of this are we causing by being the people who decide that guy looks suspicious or this person is in my way, I'm going to call the police?
Well, you know, that's actually a very apt question, because last night at the police commission, the Coalition on Homelessness, which advocates for the street population, actually made a presentation in front of the police commission last night telling them that, you know, people are just not informed enough on, you know, on who to call when they see a homeless person who is not threatening and who might be going through some kind of through some kind of crisis. And so they urged, and the police commission seemed to be receptive to the idea that they're going to, I wouldn't want to say overhaul, but definitely strengthen their dispatch protocol to inform people that you just don't call 911 if somebody is not, you know, committing a crime.
And homelessness is not a crime. I had an experience once where I found a woman passed out half on the sidewalk, half in the street, and she was really not very responsive. She realized that I was there, but she wasn't really talking. And somebody got into a van that was parked near her and almost ran her over. Didn't realize she was there. Started backing up.
Oh my God.
Took me and a couple other people banging on the door saying, stop, stop, stop. And then he jumped out and went, oh my God, there's somebody there. And when I called 911, the first thing that, you know, I said was, there's this woman, she needs medical, or this woman passed out, not really responding. And I was asked by the dispatcher, do you think police or medical is a more appropriate response here? And I think that people just need to know what they want when they call. For example, I'm hoping this is still the correct phone number, but it might be worth saving a number and double checking this. But there's a thing called the Mobile Crisis Treatment Team. And their number is 415-970-4000. And they're there to respond to things that may not be police appropriate, where somebody, you know that you need some kind of help and you're not equipped to deal with this yourself, but police may not be the right answer.
Indeed. And Commander Lazar, who is the head of the Community Engagement Division of the SFPD, last night urged everybody in attendance and everybody watching the meeting to download the 311 app as well.
Oh, that's a good
311 is just kind of this you know, super, super user kind of app and number that you can call if you're, if there's any quality of life, you know, for any quality of life issues. Sometimes the police are sent. Sometimes the homeless outreach team is sent. Sometimes public works is sent to these calls. But as last night's meeting showed, they're trying to strengthen 311 so that police kind of take a step back from these situations, because law enforcement, the Homeless Coalition last night said, really is causing a lot of stress for these folks, and in a lot of ways, moving them around and using law enforcement to take care of this is really making the problem a lot worse.
It's kind of like a, if you're a hammer, every problem looks like a nail situation.
Sure.
And, you know, I don't envy a police officer who's sent to respond to a situation like this where they are law enforcement. That is their role. I don't think most of them are. I mean, we have a very highly educated police force, generally speaking, but they're not, you know, they're not mental health professionals. And that's a lot of the calls that they have to answer, as far as I understand it.
And there does seem to be a bit of a just a gap in how any agency now deals with mental health crises in general. Now, there are you know, a good number, I think, just over, you know, 800 of the police officers now have been crisis intervention trained, which is, you know, definitely teaches them, you know, how to engage in that
crisis intervention training being time, distance, and rapport.
Right, exactly, right. But in any case, with people who are, you know, suffering from mental health crises, it is there's nowhere. People are kind of at a loss, and agencies are kind of at a loss for how to actually serve these folks. Facilities are not there. Long-term facilities are not there, especially for people without homes.
Right.
And
a whole nother crisis.
It's a whole nother crisis, but one that is strongly linked to the homeless population. And a lot of people, you know, are indeed homeless because they can't take care of themselves. And so, you know, the city doesn't seem to have the resources to serve this population. And it doesn't seem like they that it's necessarily fitting into, you know, the homeless plans, you know, currently, you know, in draft right now. Well, I think largely because it's expensive. It's very expensive.
Yeah. Well, that's a whole other topic that
right.
can go into. We can go down all kinds of rabbit holes with that one.
Sure, sure. Well, in any case, we don't want you to miss the town hall meeting tonight. It's at 6:00 again. This is at True Hope Church, at 6 p.m. And, you should check this out, you know,
to discuss the police shooting,
to discuss the police shooting. And, you know, this is happening now, you know, amid this discussion, you know, this very wide ranging discussion in, the San Francisco Police Department about how they use force. So it'll be interesting to see how the department deals with this. In any case, thank you, Laura, for joining me today.
Thanks, Julian.
You'll be hearing my voice much more on Listen Local, stay tuned, and I hope you have a great Friday, or a great Thursday, rather, Friday and weekend. Have a good one.
Fuck with the kid, you don't fuck with the kid, and I show you my world, and y'all seen how I live, from the womb to the crib, and the crib to the school, and the school to the raid, and the raid to the games, Hazzies for the eats, Casablanca's for the meat, Slacho Pensas for the bread, went to Haji's, got a Philly cheese instead, round the corner to Oli, cause you know I'm Mexican, drink horchata with my peeps, hug my auntie in the street, you could find me and Jeff, on the court playing ball, football and track, and I still play them all, even though that I'm whack. Pleasant Ave, Italianos, Gotti's and the Lucianos, Rayo sitting on the corner, ever been inside, there's a guy at the table, eats Vasulas, he cried. $2.50, I could go anywhere I want, even if they check my bag, I'm hiding weed from the cops. I was on a six, green line check. I was on a six,